Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Bye. Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead with full attention, and thus gained release from the course of material existence. Purport. The setting of the sun does not mean the end of the sun. It means that the sun is out of our sight. Similarly, the end of the mission of the Lord on a particular planet or universe only means that He is out of our sight. The end of the Yadu dynasty also does not mean that it is annihilated. It disappears along with the Lord out of our sight. As Maharaj Yudhishthira decided to prepare to go back to Godhead, so also Kunti decided, and thus she fully engaged herself in the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, which guarantees one a passport for going back to Godhead after quitting this present material body. The beginning of devotional service to the Lord is the beginning of spiritualizing the present body, and thus an unalloyed devotee of the Lord loses all material contact in the present body. The abode of the Lord is not a myth, as is known by the unbelievers or ignorant people. But one cannot reach there by any material means like a Sputnik or space capsule. But one can certainly reach there after leaving this present body, and one must prepare himself to go back to Godhead by practicing devotional service. That guarantees a passport for going back to Godhead, and Kunti adopted it. Om Gyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Deshitarine Chai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, so thank you all for coming. Before I start, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here and also on the internet. Many years ago, there was a push for all the brahmacharis to give class, especially those of them who are, you know, so-called qualified. So me and several others, we tried to dodge it for a long time, and we managed to avoid dodging it for quite a few years, actually, like 4 to 5 years. And I don't know how, there were so many different ideas. At one point, Sutta Prabhu even came up with like a schedule that one brahmachari should give class every week. And we used to make excuses and keep swapping till for like months and months. And eventually Shruti Prabhu was like, no, you guys have to give class, you know. And he was pushing it so much. Anyway, my mentality was, you know, how can I give class before such elevated Vaishnavas? I'm not blowing my humility trumpet. It's I'll tell you in the end what happens. So anyway, so I myself avoided it for a long, long time. But eventually I heard something that Hridayananda Maharaj said. And he said, when I joined the temple, they gave me a service to clean the pots. So he goes, I was cleaning the pots. He said, then a few years later, they gave me a service to go out on books. So he said, I was going out on books. And then a few years later, they gave me a service to be a guru. So I'd be a guru. So the point is, it's just another service like anything else. It's like, you know, washing the pots. One day you wash pots, when you're asked to wash pots, you wash pots. When you're asked to give class, you give class. It's just another service. So it's, so what I realized that what I had in my mind thinking I was humble was actually just false humility and stubbornness. And I frightened many people out, a lot of us did in the process, but then I thought, okay, let's just, humility means to just accept what the Vaishnavas want you to do. So here I am again, I've been asked to give class, this time on short notice. Today I'm just, what do you call, a filler, They just asked me like, you know, yesterday or the day before. So anyway, don't expect anything amazing. Not that there's anything amazing, I say anyway. But yeah, so once, so reading, after reading this verse, I was just thinking how important it is to read Prabhupada's books and things that Prabhupada explains in the purport. And we actually have no access to Krishna or the spiritual world. But because of Prabhupada, we have so much understanding, because the books have been around for a long, long time. This one morning walk, it's called Responsible Jackals. You can listen to it if you want. Morning walks are amazing because you see a whole different mood of Prabhupada. And devotees are explaining to Prabhupada that people don't want to take meditation, the process of God realization, because they are just frustrated now. Because in the Christian church and many other places, they've asked so many questions, they haven't found answers, and now they're just frustrated. So they don't want to take this process. And Prabhupada said, well, why are they frustrated? Because we are not frustrated. We have the process. Why are they frustrated? And he goes, because they say that no one has any information about God. That's what the people out there say. And Prabhupada says, you know what Prabhupada said? Prabhupada said, you don't have, you rascal. Because you are a rascal, you don't have information. But you come here and you wash my feet and I will inform you how to go back to Godhead. So it's very interesting. So I think Prabhupada was trying to make different points in that statement. So it's not that, you know, as an outsider would hear and say, oh, that's quite, you know, straightforward, maybe even arrogant to some extent. But what Prabhupada was trying to say, that unless you serve the Vaishnavas, unless you humbly admit and serve, you can't know the process. If you try to learn the process by intellectual understanding, you'll only get so far. And another thing was also, you need to look in the right place. You know, all these, you know, Vedas, all these books, the Bhagavatam has so much information about how we can go back to Godhead. And it's explained very nicely by Srila Prabhupada. And he said, that's why I'm writing so many books. On one occasion, Srila Prabhupada said, he said, I'm constantly praying to Krishna that I may not be able to sleep so that I can translate all these books. How many of you here in the ashram are sleep deprived? Okay, you need more sleep. Prabhupada is saying, I'm constantly praying to Krishna that I'm not able to sleep so that I can translate these books. So Prabhupada has painstakingly gone through the effort to write all these books for us so that we can understand. And you'll hear many, many lectures, many morning walks, many conversations where Prabhupada's always saying, books, books, books. You know, distribute my books, read my books. Distribute my books, read my books. And once upon a time, one person who was a new person in the audience, when Prabhupada was giving a lecture, he stood up and asked, you're just saying books, books, books. All you say is books. All you talk about is books. You are all just like bookworms. And Prabhupada shot back and said, well, better to be bookworms, because if you don't read these books, in your next life you'll be a stoolworm, he said. So these books are there to take us back to Godhead. Very important to read these books. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about devotional service. And just like when you want to go to a certain country, you need a passport, right? You need a passport and a visa. Now, you know, because of this lockdown, you have to quarantine before you go anywhere or after you come back. But a passport is necessary if you want to travel. So just like that, if you want to travel to the spiritual world, Prabhupada said you can't go in a Sputnik, because, you know, in those days it was American-Russian sort of Cold War going on, who can get to the moon first and back, that kind of thing. So Prabhupada writes about it. He says you can't use mechanical means to go back to Godhead. Just yesterday I was reading this book, if you haven't read it, it's an amazing book, Chasing Rhinos by the Swami. So I'm on part two now, so where the devotees are in India, and they're at the Kumbh Mela, and they're walking along the road, getting closer to the Ganga, and there's about 10 million people there. And as they get close and close, they see all these yogis. And some of the yogis, they're like lying on their back, and they got like spears coming out of their torso. And they're not bleeding. And it's like all the wounds are healed. They've been there for God knows how long. And then they go further up. And then there's one guy who's just buried fully under in the sand with only his arms sticking out. And his fingernails are so long, they're like coming down here. So apparently he's been there for quite a while, you know. So, and then he saw, Shyam Sundar Prabhu writes, that he actually saw yogis, many of them, who were levitating. And one guy was actually 2 feet off the ground. So sometimes we talk about yogic siddhis like, oh yeah, whatever, you know. But they're actually there. But Prabhupada writes, even after you have all these yogic siddhis, all these painstaking effort you go through, he goes, what are you going to get? You're still not going to come back, but that old age disease, you can't make it to the spiritual world. If you want to go to the spiritual world, you need the passport. And the process for obtaining that passport is devotional service, as Prabhupada writes in the purport. So, I think the question we need to ask ourselves is, whatever we are doing in our devotional service, is that enough to convince the passport officer to give us a passport? Who's the passport officer? Prabhupada's the passport officer. You can say Krishna is also the passport officer. Krishna is in your heart. He knows. So our devotional service, do you think by your practice of devotional service, do you think it's sufficient to take you back to Godhead? So I'm going to leave you with that question, because I guess the answer we all know is that we need to sincerely practice devotional service. Now in this purport, it is explained how, well, in the verses, what's happened so far is that Krishna's left the planet, Arjuna's come back, he's explained to all the devotees, all his brothers, that Krishna's left, the Yadu dynasty's been annihilated, and now, you know, we should also leave at some point. So anyway, the Pandavas are retiring, and in this verse, Kunti is also performing, she's also made up her mind that she's going to perform devotional service and go back to Godhead. So that's the idea. Now, Krishna's left the planet, but an important thing Prabhupada mentions is, in one sense, Krishna never leaves the planet. Krishna is always here. Okay, Krishna never leaves. And the analogy he gives is, anyone remember the analogy? Sun, the analogy of the sun. That the sun may appear out of sight, but that doesn't mean it's gone. The sun's still there. It's just not in our vision. So the point Prabhupada is trying to make is Krishna is always there. But if you want to see Krishna, then you have to develop the vision. And that vision you can only develop through devotional service. Okay? Without devotional service, through intellectual understanding, you can't have the vision. But if you practice devotional service sincerely, we'll have the vision. One devotee once told Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, you are very brave. He said, you are so fearlessly defeating this scientist with so much conviction about God. And Prabhupada said, you know what he said? He said, yes. He goes, these scientists are all blind. It's like a blind man saying that there is no sun. Okay, if a man is blind, he can't see the sun, but then he's saying there's no sun. So the scientists are blind that they're saying that there is no sun. He goes, but I am seeing Krishna who is standing behind them and smiling at me. How can I not be convinced? He goes, I'm seeing Krishna with my eyes, the standing behind the scientist and smiling. That's why I'm so convinced, and I'm telling them that Krishna exists. So like that, if you have the vision, then you can see Krishna and you can practice devotional service. It makes your conviction to practice even stronger. But not all of us have that vision, because we are still engaged in the practice of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna makes it a little bit easier for us. So in Kali Yuga, Krishna, even though in his personal form, may leave, but he appears in the material world in many, many other forms. Can any of you tell me what forms the Lord is still present here for us to be able to see him? Gaur Krishna Prabhu says, holy name. Ian Prabhu says, Bhagavatam, Godrum Prabhu, the deity, and somebody else had a hand up there. Bhagavatam, Prasadam, any others? Devotees, very interesting. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur even writes that Krishna is present in the form of his devotees. So it doesn't mean devotees are God, but it means that in the presence of devotees, you can realize God. Just like in the presence of deities, you can understand Krishna. Prabhupada used to correct his devotees many times. Prabhupada would say, you speak, like that. And on one occasion he asked, I forget the devotee's name, but Prabhupada asked him, "Will you explain?" And he said, "So Krishna is in the holy name." And then Prabhupada immediately corrected him. He said, "No, Krishna is not in the holy name. Krishna is the holy name. There's no difference between Krishna and the name." Difficult concept to understand. But a form, a very important form that Krishna appears in the material world, as was mentioned by Gaudama Prabhu, is the deity form. And it's a very easy form to realize. Sometimes it may be difficult for us to have such awe and reverence for the holy name. Okay, we're sometimes on our phones in Bhagavatam class or in while chanting, sometimes we're on our phone, we don't pay attention, so holy name is difficult. But when everybody comes in presence of the deities, then you do have some sort of, awe and reverence, or at least understanding that, okay, Krishna is here. So it's very, very important. Now, for the last few months, since end of March, since I got back literally from India, after the Mystic India trip, they asked me, "Well, we're going into the lockdown, we don't have people, can you do some deity service?" I said, "Okay." So since then, pretty much every single day, I've been doing deity worship, and I have to say that it's been very, 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 conducive to my spiritual advancement. And I don't know how much I've advanced in my spiritual life personally, but it's definitely helped my consciousness, and it's definitely helped me see deity worship and deities in a different way. Because you're there every day, and I usually dress Gaur Nithai. So I'm there every day, 7 days a week, dressing, and after a while, you know, you get used to the process of dressing, and then it's almost like automatic after a while. But then it gives you the opportunity to actually try and understand that, hang on, this is Krishna here in his form as most merciful form as Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And you start, then the process of worshipping sort of becomes, you know, what it is, external in one sense, because ultimately if you look at it, it's a technique. Anybody can learn a technique, okay? Anybody can learn how to dress the deity, okay? Giving class, it's a technique. Anybody can learn a technique to give class. You know, any other thing, distributing books, it's a technique. Anybody can learn the technique, okay? So it's not a big deal. Just like we spoke, giving class is not a big deal. Dressing the deities is not a big deal. But it's the sincerity with which you do it is what Krishna wants to see. So after a while, you know, you start thinking differently, and I've had a few realizations, so I'd like to share them. But at the same time, also with some philosophy that is explained by Srila Prabhupada and different books that I've been reading. Now, if you want to learn philosophy, like, really deep, then the books to read are... Prabhupada definitely gives everything, and everything is there. But... Really, if you want to get philosophical, but in a very simple way, books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he explains philosophy in very interesting ways. And it's almost like, it's very real, you know, it's very real. Like in one place, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that some people say, well, the deity is an idol. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, yeah, he goes, deity is an image for us to understand Krishna. It's an external manifestation. He accepts that. But what he says after that, we'll come to that in a minute. But before that, I want to ask you, what's the difference? Is there a difference between the deity of Krishna and Krishna in his personal form as he came 5,000 years ago? So Krishna was here, walking on planet Earth and, you know, doing his thing, pastimes, performing his pastimes. Is there a difference between that Krishna and this Krishna over here? Let's come back to you. You answered too many questions. But let's see if someone else has something to say. No? Okay, go on. Go for it, Sam.
It depends what you want from Krishna.
Depends what we want from Krishna. In what sense?
Like if you want to see Krishna as he is in the deity, then he'll reveal that to you if you have the sincere
desire. Okay. But if you want the deity to walk about?
Yeah.
He will?
I mean, we're just reading in CC and he did, right?
Okay. And David Prabhu has an answer.
I believe it's a different form of Krishna. And I remember last Tamasami when Lokanath Maharaj was here, he said, it's not this Krishna's birthday, appearance day, on the altar.
Yeah. Jai. Any other answers? Ian Prabhu has an answer.
I guess it's the same in one sense, in that it's the expansion of the Lord, but it's different in the same that obviously the sun is stationary, and through the deity form of Radha Gokulanand, we get to concentrate on perceiving the Krishna who was walking about and was being all around us. So he kind of acts like as a vision to the other, even though they're none different. That's okay. How I see it, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Any of the ladies want to say something? Jagat Priya Mataji, do you want to pass the mic, please? Jagat Priya Mataji must have many realizations. She's been dressing Radha Gokulananda like non-stop, no breaks. At least I've had a few breaks, but I don't think she's had even one break because there's nobody else to do the job. So she's been on it 7 days a week since March. Yes, please tell us.
No. I would also say, like the other person just said, he's non-different. I think Krishna is non-different. Uh-huh. And of course, he comes in many manifestations, isn't it? So, but all manifestations are him still. Yeah. So it is him. No, but if you ask now if it is he in with a peacock feather in Vrindavan, I mean, he never leaves Vrindavan. So I don't know how to answer that. You know, but he is Krishna.
So the deity is definitely Krishna. But at the same time, it's explained how our philosophies of simultaneous oneness and difference. So he is and he isn't in the same, at the same time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the deity manifests as Krishna according to the devotion of the devotee. Okay? So here is something he says. I'm just going to read it out. Okay? A couple of things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. He says, the deity worshipped by the Vaishnavas is not an idol, which is separate from the Lord. He goes, the deity is a representation that invokes devotion to the Lord. Okay? That's one. And then further on, he goes to explain that just as in industry or in science, every unseen object has a gross image. The Lord, unseen by material eyes, has an image in the form of a deity. Okay, so he's saying that the deity is the image of God. He says, because of the devotional propensity, the pure devotees constantly experience that the deity is truly the Supreme Lord. So he's saying the condition here is the devotional propensity. Okay, and then he writes, the connection between an electric light, so that light, and a generator is understood only by seeing the result when the electric light is switched on. So when you switch on a light, only then you notice a connection between that and the source of light. Okay, till you switch the light on, you don't know what's the connection. Okay, so he explains, what will those who are ignorant of electricity understand when they see a generator? Okay, and he says, similarly, what will those who have no devotion in their hearts say about the deity except idol? Okay, so if you have devotion in the heart, he says, the pure devotees always see Krishna, always see the deity as Krishna. But those who don't have devotion in the heart, for them, it's just an idol. And Krishna also reciprocates in the same way with the devotees. According to the devotion in your heart, Krishna reciprocates through the deity. And like Sam was mentioning in the, which story you've been reading, Sakshi Gopal? In the Sakshi Gopal story, because of the devotion, the deity even walked. Okay, he walked quite a few hundred miles, which is not very conventional of a deity. But at the same time, for someone who doesn't have any devotion, the devotee won't even talk to him. What to speak of talking? He wouldn't even reciprocate in any way because our devotion is not that strong. So Krishna is not limited by the material elements with which the deity is manufactured. So the deity is made from wood, from paint, from stone, from marble, from different things that are explained. But the deity, Krishna, is not limited by the characteristics of that material. Based on the devotion in the devotee's heart, Krishna can reciprocate in a certain way. So Krishna is the deity if you want him to be. But if you want Krishna to be an idol, then Krishna will stay as an idol for you. Because Krishna says, whatever is in people's hearts, he goes, I make it happen. Prabhupada even explains in one purport that, not a purport, in a class, he explains that if a person wants to go away from me, he goes, I give him so much, I cover him with illusion so much that he'll never be able to come to me. He goes, but if one wants to come to me, I'll give him opportunity all the time so he can come to me finally. So Krishna fulfills the desire of everybody's heart. So whether you're a devotee or not devotee, okay, if you want to go away from Krishna, Krishna will fulfill that. If you want to come to Krishna, he'll fulfill that. If you want to see Krishna as a deity, if you want to see Krishna as Krishna, Krishna is the deity and he'll manifest to you in that way. But if you don't, then you'll just say, well, that's an idol of Krishna. Okay? Now another point is that some people may ask, actually, no, wait. I already covered that. That why doesn't Krishna... Some people say that, like if you look at the history of India, India was ruled by outside tribes or conquerors or invaders for more than 700 years. And during that period, there's a lot of things that happened, like some people used to like destroy temples, like the Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan. That was just one of them. But literally, they used to plunder temples, destroy them. They used to smash the deities as well. And so then somebody may ask the question, okay, well, you say the deity is Krishna, then why didn't he save himself? What's your answer to that? Why didn't Krishna save himself when somebody tried to destroy the temple or the deity? It's okay, there's no wrong answers, we're just discussing. Sankirtan Priyaprabhu hasn't said anything, so maybe Mike.
So you just said earlier on that the deity reciprocates with the personality who's in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so these individuals who came to break the temple, came to break the deity, deity reciprocated.
He let it happen,
but that doesn't mean the deity was present at that time in that form.
Okay. Siddhapa Prabhu?
Could say that like Krishna, when he comes in his different forms, he's coming to Shri Radha Gopalananda ki.
Jai, jai, jai.
When Krishna comes in different forms, he displays different aspects of his divinity. So when Krishna comes in certain avatars, then he exhibits his omnipotence. But when Krishna comes as the deity, he's not necessarily coming as a deity to display his omnipotence, but what he's coming to display is his bhakta vatsalya, you know, that his love for his devotee, that he responds to that. So the deity is basically a form of Krishna that doesn't respond to animosity, it responds to love. And therefore, for anyone who treats the deity with neglect or animosity, Krishna doesn't respond because he only displays certain aspects in certain forms.
That's very good. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, Sutta Prabhu, for mentioning that. Yes, the deity only responds according to the devotion in the person. At the same time, Krishna's existence is not threatened by the destruction of a deity. So, you know, some people used to like, you know, destroy the deities, thinking that, oh, if I destroy, you know, they say it is Krishna, but it's not. Okay, look, I killed Krishna. No, but Krishna's existence is not threatened when you destroy the deity. It doesn't make any difference to him. It's not like Krishna's up there crying, saying, oh no, my deity's been destroyed. The deity is a form which is a connection for the devotee. It's based on the devotee's devotion. That's what the deity is there for. So a devotee may have a certain mood and a certain connection and a certain relationship with the deity, and that's why Krishna as a deity reciprocates through him. But someone who doesn't have that relationship, Krishna doesn't care. Sometimes Krishna does save himself though, but he does it in a way that is sort of fits into like a nice story, like the Gopal deity, where Krishna, through his devotees, you know, they save the deity. So Krishna can save himself. Because if Krishna thinks that my devotee is going to be really distressed by my, you know, breaking, and Krishna doesn't want to break that relationship with the devotee, then Krishna will make arrangements for himself to be saved. So if he wants, he can save himself. If he doesn't, then he doesn't bother. But either way, Krishna's existence is not threatened by the deity. If Krishna wants, he can do unusual things, like he can walk, he can eat. There is a story of Raghunandan Das Thakur when Krishna as a deity actually ate physically when he was offered bhoga. At a manor, I remember a few years ago, there was a big hoo-ha about the deity eating puris from the altar, Radha Gokulananda eating puris. So once I was just standing out here and one devotee came up to me and they told me, like, here, Radha Govinda Prabhu, here, here's some maha from the deity. So I'm like, yeah, yeah, I took from inside. I just had prasadam. And they're like, no, no, this is the maha that Krishna actually ate. I'm like, well, Krishna actually eats every day. Like, just because there's a part of the puri not missing doesn't mean Krishna's not eating. Prabhupada explained Krishna eats with his eyes. So Krishna is actually eating every day. It's not just a formality that we place the bhoga there. Okay, it's done, it's prasadamized, so let's serve it out. Krishna is actually eating. It's not just a ceremony you do so you can get on with your eating. Just offering. Krishna actually eats. And they said, no, no, look, this, look, Krishna's actually eaten it. Look, here, there's a bit of a puri missing. I'm like, okay, I'll take some then, just to keep the devotee happy. I said, but give it to me from the other side, just in case. You know, I go into ecstasy or something. Anyway, I took a little bit. Naudi Prabhu fitted a camera. It was a rat. So, anyway, so then we got some cats to take the rats out. But devotees, being very merciful, used to feed the cat so much. And on one occasion, I actually noticed the cat was lying there, sleeping. And a rat walked past. And it put its head up, looked at the rat, put its head down and went back to sleep. Because I was probably thinking, I'll just wait another hour for lunch. Why bother chasing a rat, you know? So then they got some wild cats. And I think they did a good job. So we're rat-free, sort of. Guru Krishna Prabhu is shaking his head. Maybe they're starting to come back again. Anyway, we just got to be careful. But the idea is that with the deity, we also, at the same time, the relationship with the deity is personal, and we shouldn't like transgress rules and regulations when it comes to a deity. We should always have respect. The deity is also served as Lakshmi Narayan in one sense. Prabhupada said, the deity is Krishna, but he said, don't jump on the back of the deity. Okay? Thinking he's a coward boy, like that. So deity is always to be treated with respect and in a certain way. One last thing, and then we'll open it up for questions or discussion if we have any. But an interesting thing I read, which I hadn't actually heard before, which, I don't know, maybe you have, you haven't, but I thought I'll just discuss it, because it's very related to the deity form of Krishna, and it opens up a few more understandings of how the deity works. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains how there's two things, there's ashraya and vishaya. And in English he explains sort of the possessor and the possessed. Okay, like there's a possessor of qualities and there's the qualities that are possessed. For example, he gives the example of how Krishna is a possessor and his energies are possessed. Okay, like that. And another example he gives is how the tree is the possessor and the branches and leaves are possessed. And he says how the body is the possessor, but the hands and legs are possessed. So he says, he asks the question, so which of Krishna's six opulences is the possessor, which possesses all the other opulences? So Krishna has six main opulences, right? Can we name them? Beauty, wealth. That's anyway, we know the six opulences. That's all I hear when everybody speaks at the same time. Okay, so we know the six opulences. Which of the six is the possessor, the most important one, and which of the others are possessed? David Prabhu has the answer. Power is the possessor. Okay, any other answers? Beauty. Sutta Prabhu says beauty. Gopinath Prabhu says renunciation. Anybody from this side want to take a guess? No guesses? Okay, so he actually explains that beauty is the possessor. He says, and beauty possesses, he says, three opulences of the other five. Okay? So number one, wealth. Number two, fame. And number three, power. Just like if you think about it, if you have beauty, it's very likely you'll have wealth. Wealth will naturally follow if you have beauty. If you're beauty, fame will follow. If you're beautiful, power will also follow. You'll have the power to do so many things. So he says beauty is a possessor and wealth, fame and power are possessed. And he explains how knowledge and renunciation, he goes, are not qualities in themselves, but they're qualities of fame. Knowledge and renunciation. So when Krishna appears as a deity, he appears in his most prominent quality of beauty. Like, what's the first thing you say when you come and see the deity? You don't say the deity is very powerful. You say deities are very beautiful. So Krishna has manifested in his most prominent quality as a deity to attract our minds. And that's why deities are very, very important in our practice of devotional service. So Krishna is still present in this world, even though he's left as a person and his personal form, but Krishna is still present as the deity. And by establishing deity worship, Prabhupada has actually done us a big favor, because without deity worship, where would we be, isn't it? Without the deities. You walk in your temple room, no deities. It's strange. So we're very grateful that Prabhupada installed the deities, many, many deities around the world, and Krishna also manifests in the deity form for us to revive our devotional service, and so we can get our passport to go back to the spiritual world. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Or Srinivas Prabhu, yes, Mike?
Rupa Goswami says in his Namastikam that the holy name is more merciful than the deity form of the Lord. Mm. The holy name you can chant in any circumstances.
Yeah.
Deities, you have to have strict standards in terms of cleanliness and punctuality and everything.
Definitely, yeah. The holy name is the most merciful form of Krishna. It is a yuga dharma to chant the holy name. Deity worship was the standard in Dwapara Yuga. But we're still carrying on deity worship. So yeah, definitely, the holy name is the way to go back to Godhead. But Krishna, like what I'm saying is that Krishna appears in many, many forms to help us in the process. So, yes, Ian Prabhu, don't ask me difficult questions.
Hi Krishna, thank you so much for the class. Really, really nice class. I had two questions.
So can we take the first one first?
Okay, we'll take the first one, okay. Yeah. So I just wanted to understand, okay, so in the purport it talks about Queen Kunti choosing to perform devotional service. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know what devotional service meant at that time, just because my conception is, you know, like when the temple doing particular services, Sankirtan, speaking to people. So what kind of devotional service was it that was being done around that time that she chose to do so that she could get the passport to go back? That's the first one.
Okay, can I answer that? I don't know. Is it explained later on what she actually did? Or in the Mahabharata, or in the book. I haven't read the verses after that, so I'm not really sure. I think, from what I understand, the Pandavas, when they retired, they go into the forest, isn't it? And they went to the Himalayas. Yeah, like that. So, I don't know. I can speculate, but I shouldn't. Okay. So, if I come across it, then I'll let you know. I don't know if anybody else knows. What, Sutapa Prabhu, Gaur Krishna Prabhu, Godruma Prabhu, Jagapriya Mataji, all the senior Vaishnavas, Srinivas Prabhu.
I'm guessing if he offered his prayers to Queen in a Bhagavad prayer to Queen, maybe that in itself qualified as meditating prayers.
Yeah, maybe it was meditation, yeah, all the prayers. Those prayers were before though, but I can imagine if she said them before, I don't see why she can't say them after. But I don't know, any other... No, okay, we don't know. What's the second? What's that?
She went with somebody, another lady. Who was it? Gandhari. She went with Gandhari and it was
terrible. In the forest?
Yes.
Okay, well, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then the other question was based on the question that you posed to us on whether we're doing sufficient devotional service in order to get the passport ourselves.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask, how would we know if what we're doing is sufficient enough at this current state of time? Just because at times we think we're over exceeding our limits, or we're moving too much under. So how do we know what we're doing is sufficient enough to get us to that point?
My understanding behind that is that devotional service, whether it's sufficient or not, is not based on quantity. It can't be quantified, saying, you can't say that I'm doing 12 hours of devotional service, so it's better than somebody else who's doing 2 hours of devotional service. I think the understanding is with how much sincerity are you doing it, and are you giving it the best you can, or are you hanging around, spacing out, you know, two for Krishna, two for me, that kind of thing. So I think it's more based on your sincerity in practice rather than quantity. But I think at the same time, if you're really sincere and if you're fully dedicated, you would want to do as much as you can for Krishna. So I don't think there's a number that I can give you. But I think according to ashram, it's 6 hours. 6 hours a day. All right. Sutapa Prabhu has... Is that an answer to his thing? Okay. Oh, okay. I'm just... Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the class. I just had a question about Krishna's reciprocation with us. Like, we're trying to develop a personal relationship with Krishna. So we're trying to see how Krishna is acting in our life, how he's reciprocating. But then often we kind of... things happen in our life and we say, oh, Krishna arranged that, or Krishna did that. And on one hand, it's very nice because we're trying to see that Krishna is active in my life. On another hand, it sometimes feels a bit like we're second-guessing Krishna, or maybe it's just our own kind of mind coming up with something, or, you know, how are we even to presume we know what Krishna is doing in our life? Like, he may be like 10 steps ahead, or... And, you know, oftentimes we only recognize that Krishna is acting in my life when it somehow works out according to what we plan anyway. Then we're like, oh yeah, Krishna wanted me, you know, like, and then it becomes very clear to us that Krishna is acting in our life. But when it goes against our plan, then we don't. So I'm just wondering if you can say something about this. How do we actually understand Krishna's reciprocation in our life in a way that on one extreme we're not being impersonal and just saying like, no, no, everything is Krishna, you know. And at the same time, not going to the other extreme where we kind of try to second guess it and it just becomes material because we're just thinking that, oh, Krishna is just doing something according to my conception. I don't know if that makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you, Sudha Prabhu. I know you know the answer, but you know, I'll just try my own, whatever I can say. It's very interesting. My understanding is that everything happens by Krishna's sanction. And I think Krishna sanctioning something is different from Krishna doing something in your life. Like, for example, my understanding is that Krishna will only act in your life to the extent you want him to act based on your surrender. So Krishna doesn't really get involved with everybody's life in the same way and even to the same extent. So Krishna, like if one is fully surrendered, then Krishna will completely act through you and arrange everything for you and everything will go on nicely. But if you're not fully surrendered, then Krishna acts through you to the extent of your surrender. But we know the theory that when something happens, then Krishna has to sanction it. But the sanctioning is different from Krishna acting like that. It's a good mentality to have that, okay, something's happened, whether it's happened before because Krishna did it or whether it happened because, you know, we messed up or whatever it was. It's good to remember Krishna by saying that, okay, it happened by Krishna's sanction. That's a good sort of approach to it, that, okay, Krishna sanctioned it, so it happened. Okay, next time let's try a bit more, okay? Like sometimes I've heard people when they go out on book distribution and somebody tells them, you know, they tell somebody, oh Prabhu, today I distributed 25 books. And then somebody will say, no, you didn't distribute those books, Krishna distributed them. And I sometimes think I'm not sure about that, because I think Krishna wants to see his devotees put in the effort. I don't think Krishna's like standing there distributing books for you. I think Krishna appreciates the effort that you put to distribute books. So rather than Krishna distributed the books, it's Krishna appreciates the effort you put for distributing books for Krishna. So, you know, Krishna doesn't do everything for you. You're not, you know, spoon-fed baby just because you're wearing, you know, dhoti kurta sari and chanting beads. It's not like Krishna is just doing everything for you. So, but what has happened is the books have been distributed by Krishna's sanction. Because if Krishna didn't sanction you to distribute, then you wouldn't have been able to. But it doesn't mean Krishna distributed books for you. So, I don't know if that kind of answers a few things. But I don't know if the ladies have any questions. We haven't. No? The room? Okay. Anybody else? Sam Prabhu? I think 8:35. Let's just take one last one, maybe.
Sorry, Prabhu. Just one thing I heard from Pankajani Prabhu. He was telling the story about when the when they were installing the Panchatattva in Mayapur, and it seemed as if they were crying. There was tears coming down the face. And he said that for those, it was condensation. But for those who wanted to see it was condensation. And for the devotees who wanted to see it as tears, then it was actually tears. So I was thinking in the same way for this Puri story.
Which story?
With the Puri story you told, yeah. That Krishna, like you said, Krishna reciprocates according. So perhaps even he did do it. But for those who wanted to see that, and for those who didn't want to see that, then he gave the rats.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's a good point. But at the same time, what I would like to say is that what devotees should be able to see, that the bit of puri shouldn't have to go missing for Krishna to eat it. Because Krishna is not limited to eating bhoga the way we do. So even though nothing goes missing, Krishna fully eats everything because Krishna eats with his eyes. So yeah, it may be okay, even if you saw a, you know, rat on the CCTV eating the puri, you can still say, okay, maybe, well, who's to say that Krishna didn't appear as a rat form to come and eat the puri? So you can say that, but at the same time, it's also good to see that, okay, that may be the case, I'm not denying that, I'm also saying that it's also good to understand that Krishna eats anyway, with his eyes, even if nothing goes missing. So we should have that kind of conviction. Right. Thank you, everybody. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.